Welcome to the Champions Rugby Show. I'm Martin Hindley, and we're speaking to the biggest names in rugby to celebrate 25 years of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. Today, I'm joined by a man from a select list of European Players of the Year who has also scored a Champions Try of the Season.
Up comes Lopez, and then it's Lee. Yarto has got a bend in and outside. He's previously scored in a final. He's going to score again.
He burst onto the scene in the noughties with Bath and has been part of the ISM Clermont-Auvergne juggernaut over the past 6 years, playing his rugby at Fortress Marcel Michelin. A man to achieve the unique feat of scoring in two finals of Europe's greatest club rugby tournament. A pleasure to be joined today by Nick Abendanon.
Yeah, very good. Thanks for having me on.
First of all, I mean, what have the last few weeks been like in France with no rugby and having to self-isolate? I mean, as players, how have you been communicating and have you been coping with it, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously new waters for everyone, all the players, all the staff, all the teams. No one quite knows what's gonna happen. But all we can do really as players is firstly and most importantly, try and stay as fit as possible. Which is a tough task in itself. And other than that, you know, just enjoy spending a bit of time with your family and you know, trying to pass the time as quickly as possible during the day.
This pandemic has obviously had a big impact on you personally, hasn't it? I mean, can you tell us a little bit about your current situation and what comes next when we return to what we used to call normal and we might be calling the new normal in the future?
Yeah, so you know, I've been at Clermont now for this is my sixth season, and I had a plus one on my contract this year, which you know I was hoping to merit. Unfortunately, the staff here told me in when was it October that they weren't going to give me the plus one. So effectively, I knew that this was going to be my last season to prove myself at this level and to try and win another contract either in France or somewhere else in the world. And yeah, unfortunately for myself, the season stopped a bit prematurely. And so I haven't had the opportunity to play on the big stage and showcase what I still can do on the pitch. And so a couple of conversations that I was having with clubs have dried up, you know, no fault of their own. Obviously, every club now in the world is going to be very uncertain about their financials, about what's going to happen, about new seasons, structuring, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, for me, on the 30th of June, at this moment in time, I'm going to be having to hang up the boots because basically there's no other option, really.
Well, we wish you all the best for the next phase of your career, Nick. But we're looking back now at what you've already achieved in what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. We'll take you back to your Bath days in a short time. But first, as a player, can you maybe explain a little bit about what the tournament means to you at the very top of club rugby?
Yes, I mean, for any player, I think, you know, playing at the highest level, you talk about the Champions Cup, the Heineken Cup, as it was back then, you know, that's the pinnacle of club rugby. You know, I was lucky enough to start my trade at Bath, and obviously Bath have got a history having won the Heineken Cup against Brive. So there was always that aura around the club that, you know, they're Heineken Cup champions. You know, unfortunately for myself and the team that we had at Bath, we never quite had the success in the tournament that we would have liked. I think the furthest we got was the quarterfinals where we lost to Wasps at High Wycombe, even though we had some pretty big games. And then, yeah, when I had the opportunity to come out to France and play for Clermont, you know, the first thing that came into my head was that, you know, this is a team that's going to be in the Champions Cup playoffs pretty much every year that they play in. And, you know, that's always been my personal goal, is to win a Heineken Cup or a Champions Cup. And so without hesitation, I had to take that opportunity to play for such a big team like Clermont.
When you were busying yourself with preparing for your European debut for Bath, was that sense of excitement something that added to the experience for players, or did it bring you added pressure to play sort of in the shadows of some of those legends who won that 1998 final in Bordeaux? I mean, how was it as a player?
Yeah, it was bizarre, you know, when you're a youngster, you know, having come through the academy, played a few A-League games for Bath, and then suddenly you're chucked into the first team training squad with, you know, some of the players that I was lucky enough to play with, you know, Danny Grucock, Steve Borthwick, Lee Mears, just to name a few, Ollie Barkley, you know, these are sort of guys that you've watched on the TV practicing their trade every week, and you see them in an aura that isn't quite real, and then suddenly you're playing alongside them in the same team against you know, someone like Toulouse or Biarritz when we lost to them at the Rec. It's very surreal, but you know, at the same time it brings tingles to the spine even just thinking about those memories.
Abandonen ghosting through one, looking for the support, finds Carraro feeds inside to Banner, and it's on to Abandonen. And Nick Abandonen is going to go over for a very, very well-worked try. His third try of the season.
How much did playing with those kind of characters improve you? And in what ways did they improve you as a player between 2005 and when you left to join Clermont in 2014?
Yeah, I mean, they every single player that I played with at Bath definitely you know, improved me in a little bit of their own way. You know, playing outside of Ollie Barkley when I was a real youngster was something. Was something that really taught me a lot about creating space, and you know, having someone like him with a pass like he had was great for me, being able to get on the outside in the outside channels. And then you know, going through it, Butch James when he played at fly half, and Joey Maddock, who's now coaches the Crusaders in New Zealand, you know, he was definitely a big help to my game. And so, yeah, you know, having learnt from some of the best in the game, I definitely used that going over to France and playing for Clermont, because, you know, as a lot of guys would tell you, it's not the easiest thing coming out to France and playing here and fitting in and adapting to the different lifestyle. But, you know, lucky for me, I've grabbed it with both hands and I've really enjoyed it.
What were the biggest things that changed about your sort of week-to-week rugby life when you moved to France? And I guess, how did it all come about that you ended up at such a magnificent club in Clermont?
Yeah, it was a funny one. I was actually still in contract at Bath when I had a call from their manager, a guy called Neil McElroy. And he asked if would it be possible to get out of your contract and come and play for Clermont? At the time, I wasn't expecting it, so I was a bit sort of taken aback. You know, I personally had always felt that I was going to spend my whole playing career playing at Bath. So at the start, I sort of, you know, didn't really take it too seriously, was still in contract, so put it to one side a little bit. But I don't know, as you know, the chats that I had with mates and with my old man, who's been a big influence on my decisions and stuff, my brothers, I sort of came around to the idea that, you know, if I don't do it now, I've always wanted to play overseas. I had a chance to play for Melbourne Rebels that same time when Cipriani went over, and that fell through, unfortunately. I've always wanted to play overseas in a different country. So if I didn't do it when I did it, I knew that I would never do it, and I would have stayed at Bath my whole career. So, yeah, I basically said to ask Bruce Craig if it was possible to leave. You know, I've got this fantastic opportunity to go and play in France. Obviously, he wasn't too happy at the time, but you know, he's been very supportive of my career, my decision, and so I've got him to thank as well. And yeah, it sort of went through that way. And you know, it was actually quite funny, because they were also trying to get Benjamin Fell at the same time, and it was also gone through. And then Neil McElroy rang me and said, "Oh, look, I'm really sorry, but we're going to have to pull out, because Benjamin Fell's decided he wants to come to Clermont." So I was a bit sort of like, you know, tail in between my legs, went back to Bruce and said, "Look, it's all fallen through. I'm sorry. I'm going to be here at Bath next season." And then a week later, Neil McElroy called me again and said, "Look, this is so unprofessional. We're not usually like this, but, you know, Benjamin Fell's actually decided he's not coming to Clermont. He's going to Montpellier. So, you know, are you still interested?" And, you know, that was pretty difficult then to go back to Bruce and say, "Look, Bruce, I'm really sorry, but it's actually come up again. Can I leave, please?" And yeah, he was very kind about the whole thing. And yeah, so I packed my bags and moved out here with my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, and now we've got two kids. And yeah, it's been a bit of a roller coaster.
But take us through the doors of that famous club. A lot of people will see the yellow and blue flags on the television, the colour the passion, the excitement, the full crowds. But as a player, was that a bit daunting to walk in at a time when Clermont had so recently been in a Heineken Cup final?
Yeah, it was very daunting. Obviously, as a sort of foreign player coming into a French team when you don't speak the language, obviously you know who all the players are, but I was pretty sure that 90 to 95% of the French players there didn't know who I was from their reactions when I sort of introduced myself, walked through the door. And at the time, the first season that I came here, they were still using their old training facilities, which was, it was very old school. It was underneath the West Stand at the Stade Marcel Michelin, a very basic sort of old school setup. But, you know, you got the sense of what it was about. It was all about sort of, you know, hard work and a work ethic that that sort of drove the team on. It's changed a little bit now because in the second year, then they built their sort of multi-million pound training center, which has been absolutely outstanding. You know, we've got everything on tap there. Sort of coming in the first day when you've got the likes of, you know, Fofana and Rougerie and, we had Nalanga at the time. We had, there were some very, very big names in the team. It was almost sort of, even though I'd played 10 years at Bath, it took me back to sort of the times when I felt like I was in the academy at Bath, trying to earn my stripes. And, you know, I knew that, you know, first things first, when you come to a club like this, you're going to get judged by your performance on the pitch before anything else. So that's why I sort of stuck my head down early on and made sure that I was fit as possible so that I could give myself the best foot going forward.
A genuine European heavyweight club for so long. You actually lost your first game against Saracens in Europe that season, but won 5 matches in the pool stage and then had a chance to avenge that defeat in the semi-final against Saracens, beating them 13-9. What memories do you have about the way that Europe transpired for you in that season?
Yeah, I mean, looking back on my sort of career at Clermont, that's definitely a season that that sticks in my mind. You know, first time really being involved in a Champions Cup campaign where I knew that we've got the team to go all the way. We had already sort of started really well in the top 14. Even though I'd never played the first match in the top 14 for Clermont, I managed to then prove myself to the coaches, and they you know, had confidence in me, which then led into the Champions Cup games. And as you said, we lost our first game to Saracens, and we beat Sale and it was Munster, I think, in our group. We were the first French team to have beaten Munster away at Turman Park, which was, you know, one of the most amazing memories for me. Playing there for the first time, but then managing to beat them as well was incredible. And then, as you said, getting the revenge against Saracens, playing down the road from here in Clermont in St Etienne, which was supposed to be a neutral ground, didn't quite turn out that way because, you know, when we ran out, there was only a sea of blue and yellow. And I remember actually when we were on the bus on the way to the stadium, I was sitting next to Jonathan Davies. He was here for 2 years at the same time. And, there was just an absolutely sea of yellow and blue either side of the bus. You know, it took us a good 45 minutes just to get to the stadium. And I just sort of said to him, I said, mate, this is exactly the reason why you come to France and play for a club like this, because those sort of experiences you just don't get playing in the Premiership back home.
I remember there was a similar experience in the semi-final a few years later in the Gerland in Leinster. And it was one of the first times I've been in a stadium and thought that there's no way that Clermont can lose the game with this behind them. And I don't know, that was how it seemed to me at the time against Leinster. I mean, did it make you almost, I don't want to say unbeatable, but did it really make as much of a difference to the playing squad as it seemed from the outside?
Oh, without a doubt. I think, that semi-final against Saracens at St Etienne and then the semi-final against Leinster at the Gerland in Lyon. It's hard to describe this. Obviously you've got the Munster supporters, which I think are definitely up there. But, you know, other than them, I think nothing really can compare to the blue and yellow army in terms of their passion and the way that they just love this team. It's hard to explain when you're sort of walking around town and when you speak to the locals and when you read things in the newspapers. It's everything that happens, it affects their lives. And you know, you can almost see that when you do run out on the pitch at places like that, that their passion just sort of seeps onto the pitch, and it does lift you a huge amount as a player. It's an incredible feeling.
You faced Toulon in the final at Twickenham after that Saracens semi-final. It was the second such final in 3 years. With that in mind, what was the feeling like going to Twickenham within the squad? Was there a big sense of needing to avenge that final, or was it something that you tried to eliminate from the build-up?
No, I think, you know, thinking back to that time, there was definitely, you know, our coach put up a few things around the change room and around the meeting room at the hotel about the final they lost to Toulon 2 years before. So there definitely was a little bit of that. Obviously, I wasn't involved, so I didn't take that too personally, but... going into the final, I don't think there was a single Clermont player who thought we were going to lose. I think we were just in that that mind frame of that we just felt unbeatable that year. I think everything went for us in both the top 14 and the Champions Cup that year. And so, you know, even looking back at the game and thinking about the game, we should never have lost that game. We went up pretty early on with Fofana, who scored, and I think we were 14 points up within the first sort of 30 minutes. And then, yeah, Lee Halfpenny got them back into the game with a couple of penalties, and then they obviously scored right before halftime. And then, yeah, the turning point was obviously when Drew Mitchell scored that fantastic try, having evaded about 7 or 8 tackles. And just, you know, moments like that when you look back and just think, oh my gosh. We should never, ever have lost that game. That should have definitely been the first étoile, as they say, put on our jersey. And it doesn't bring back nice memories thinking about it.
The Guardian newspaper described your try as a little moment of wonder. Obviously, we're going to talk about the one in 2017 at BT Murrayfield shortly as well. But did it dawn on you at the time that I've just scored in a European Cup final? I mean, did the enormity of what you were a part of ever strike you as a player, or do you think that'll only ever come after the boots are hung up?
It definitely doesn't come to you when you're actually on the pitch. You know, for me actually personally, it was quite a funny game because I started off well, made a couple of good little jinks, put away Nalanga down the left hand side early on, but then I think the time was up for half time when Gitto kicked the ball to me just before half time, and I remember thinking, right, I'm going to have a crack at this one, when I should have actually just kicked it into the stand. We should have gone in at halftime. We would have been ahead at halftime and, you know, probably would have actually won the game if I'd done that. But tried to have a little dink, chipped over, and didn't go according to plan. Didn't go as well as the tried chip went. And they obviously then made momentum for them. Bastia ended up scoring. So we went in at halftime up, but, you know, only 1 point or 2 points up. So that was playing my mind a lot. At the start of the second half, I was just like, you know, kicking myself, why don't you just kick it out? So I was struggling a bit mentally, trying to get back in the game. And, you know, when Habano did sort of squiff that kick and I managed to see a little bit of open space, I knew that being in the 22, generally the fullback's going to be chasing that kick from Habano. Tried a little dink over the top, and luckily Carl Heyman kindly moved out the way pretty easily for me, and ball bounced up into my hands and scored. So that was a bit of a mental switch. It sort of I went from a, you know, mental battle to a mental, right, I'm back in this one, like, you know, let's do this, we're gonna win this one. And yeah, that definitely helped get me back on the right track, the right frame of mind.
And Habano chased his own kick, but it didn't get any further than Abandonen, who has some space to run into. Oh, Abandonen, brilliant! In the shape of an Englishman.
He can't make up for not lifting the trophy, I'm sure, but especially in a team sport like rugby. But EPCR European Player of the Year in 2015. And if you think about some of the names who are on that roll of honour, Ronan O'Gara, Rob Kearney, Sean O'Brien, Johnny Wilkinson, Stefan Armitage, Mauro Itoje, Owen Farrell, Leonie Nakarawa, of course, Alex Good, and Nick Abandonen. Has that sunk in yet, what you've achieved to be the best player in the Northern Hemisphere in that year, to win that accolade?
Yeah, it's a funny one, eh? Because, you know, I think I'm the only one on that list who has won it without actually having won the European Champions Cup. And I don't know, it's strange. Personally, I sort of feel like the odd one out. I feel like I shouldn't be on a list with those legends. You know, don't know whether it's because I've not had a massive international career. I'm not sort of obviously anywhere close in terms of a bigger name as the likes of Ronan O'Gara, Johnny Wilkinson, Rob Kearney, etc. Samadji Toji, all those people that have, you know, carved themselves out hugely successful international career. I guess, you know, me and Stefan are bringing up the sort of tail end of it, having snuck on there, but it's definitely, in terms of achievements in my career, the proudest moment for myself personally, and something that, you know, I can't wait to show my boy when he grows up. And it's memories that, at the end of the day, when you retire, it's only memories that you savor, isn't it? And that's definitely the pinnacle of my career as of yet.
Let's fast forward a couple of seasons to 2016-17. A win of the Bouclier in the final of the Top Tours, and you made it to the final again in Europe. Was that the best ISM Clermont Auvergne team in recent years that you've been a part of?
I think it was definitely up there, but I think the 14-15 team was better than the 16-17 team. But having said that, we obviously won the Bouclier with the 17 team and lost the Bouclier in the 14-15 team. But yeah, I mean, as a player coming over from England, you don't actually understand what it means to the French guys to win this trophy. I mean, you know, I had Wesley Fofana, Cammy Lopez, Remy Lamoura. I mean, they were literally in tears, you know, that they were holding up this trophy. It's like the Holy Grail for every French player to get their hands on this illustrious trophy. And and it sort of was a bit of a reality check, you know, standing on that podium, getting awarded the trophy and seeing these guys like little babies sort of blubbering away. You sort of understand there what sort of graft, what sort of hard work, all the years that they've put into trying to get their hands on this, and they finally do it. And you know, it just means so much to them. And yeah, we were a great team that year. Again, fell short in the Champions Cup, which was tough to take. But yeah, we managed to obviously pick ourselves back up after that and win the top 14. So a bit of silver lining there.
Was winning the top 14 all the more impressive in that final against Toulon because of what you'd gone through 3-4 weeks before, up in Scotland against Saracens in what was a high quality final? But did that take an extra bit of mental fortitude from the squad to get over the line in the final?
Yeah, it was strange really, because I think in the 14-15 season, when we lost to Toulon and then we had to get back into the top 14 season, we knew we were still the best team in the competition. Managed to get to the final against Stade Français, and we lost that. In the 16-17 season, it was funny because as a team, we expected to win the final against Toulon in 14-15, whereas I don't think we actually, as a team, believed or expected that we were actually going to beat Saracens. I think Saracens were that good a team at the time that I think the players, when we lost, sort of accepted that, oh, well, that was how it was going to go anyway. So now, right, the top 14 is our focus. It's been our focus from the start of the season. And so, you know, we're going to put all of our energy into that, which is why I think we ended up going on and winning it. It was harder in 14-15 because we should have won against Toulon in the final of the Champions Cup. Got to the final against Stade Français, but we were still mentally sort of struggling, having lost that final against Toulon, that we didn't turn up on the day.
The knockout rounds of the European Cup that season were thrilling. I mean, you beat Toulon fairly convincingly at Martin Michelin. And then that semi-final against Leinster, where you got off to an absolute flyer and a baking hot day in Lyon. And then all of a sudden you see Leinster in the rearview mirrors coming back in the last 20, 30 minutes of that match. That must have been shattering to go through as a player, watching the strength that Leinster were coming back in the second half. And was there a sense that you were looking for the final whistle as a side for a little bit of a while there?
Oh, without a doubt, we knew the sort of how fit Leinster are as a team, and that they would just keep coming in waves and waves. I think when you look at the two sides there, and with the context of the match, I think we deserved to go ahead early on. But as with all French teams, I think sometimes they rest on their laurels a bit, and you know, they don't mentally concentrate for the 80 minutes. And so, you know, we were trying to get the guys to keep plugging away and trying to get the message across that, you know, this is going to be, you know, a test match until the 80th minute. And, you know, Leinster is such a hugely quality side. You know, they've got some fantastic players in that team. And we had a little bit of fortune when Old Rougerie was held back in the ruck, and they had their try disallowed. And I think that was a turning point. Once that try was disallowed, I thought, okay, we're safe now. The boys, that will wake the boys up, and we managed to just squeeze over the line.
The final was an incredibly high caliber game. And rather than the result, I'd like to take you back to your try. It was named the try of the season in the Champions Cup. Must be right up there with one of your best ever. What are your memories?
Well, I'd like to say, you know, I did a lot in that try, but actually all I did was catch the ball off Yatta and put it under his sticks. So I think it's a funny one when, you know, you have your individual brilliant tries and then you have your team tries. This will definitely go down as a lot of other players doing special things to then set me up for the easy dot down. But yeah, obviously, you know, Scott Spedding picking the ball up on his own 5 metre channel and backing himself to break through the line from the back, offloading to Shuli, who then Cammy Lopez took it real nice and flat to the line, fed it out to Yatta. And once Yatta's in the wide channels, and he's just an absolute freak of a player. So I've never really seen someone who can do the things that he can do on the pitch. So yeah, when he sort of you know, handed off Owen Farrell and just flipped it out the back door, you know, I was just lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time, and thankfully didn't drop it. And then yeah, it was a bit of an easy trot in to put that one down. But looking back, and it was a great try, and you know, especially to do it against a quality side like Saracens, I don't think you see many teams around Europe scoring tries like that against quality outfits like Saracens.
And then you repeated it with so many high quality tries in that rather strange game at Allianz Park a few years later, delayed until a Monday afternoon because of the snow, and some fine tries, part of such a massive history for European club rugby as well as for Clermont. But a trophy last year in Europe in the Challenge Cup, it seemed incredibly special to the club at the time, the way that it was celebrated by fans and players alike. It seems that the club really relishes playing in Europe, whatever the tournament is. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think, you know, obviously the season we had before that was a huge, huge letdown for the club. You know, we were very disappointed with our performances, even though we did have a hugely injury-stricken team that year. We didn't live up to potential. And so I think the easy thing would have been for the coach to say, right, we're going to concentrate on the top 14 and we're just going to, you know, leave the Challenge Cup to the side. But fair play to him. You know, he said, no, this is still a European competition, and we're going to go out there and we're going to win it.
I think you got up to a half century of appearances this season. I think it was against Bath back in the pool stages. From a half century of matches in the Heineken Champions Cup, what are the best memories to date, and what are the things that you've learned the most from playing in the tournament?
Well, I'd definitely say one of the best memories was actually, you know, earning my 50th European cap playing at the ground where it all started. You know, it was, I had all my mates there, my family. You know, it's a ground that I hold very, very dear to my heart. You know, it's where my in-laws live. That's probably where we're going to move back to after, et cetera, et cetera. So to have done that against my old team, you know, that was pretty cool, pretty special moment for me. And yeah, looking back on a few of the games, I'll always remember the game that we lost to Toulouse. We were winning throughout the whole game. Last kickoff of the game, someone kicked the ball through to their side, and anyway, they went pass, scored in the corner, and then they had the kick to win it, and he slotted it. And yeah, that was talking about emotions, go from probably which would have been the biggest game for Bath to ever have won in the Champions Cup to then losing with the last kick of the game. You know, that was devastating. I got man of the match that game as well, which, you know, felt like a bit of a kick in the teeth. And then Biarritz at home was also a young kid playing against some huge names there, Yashvili and Nalanga. Some great memories. But I got to say that, you know, all my best memories that I've had have definitely been playing for Clermont, not only because the support here for the Champions Cup games at Stade Marcel Michelin is just something that it's I don't even have words to describe it, really. It's top 14 games, it's amazing. But for Champions Cup games, I don't know how they do it. But they manage to just pick it up, five or six levels. And when the band starts going and everyone gets out their steets and starts jumping, and it's very, very special. I've got nothing but good memories of this competition.
Your final question from me: you're only 33. What objectives do you still have in rugby? Things that you want to achieve for yourself and that you want to experience in the sport?
Yeah, I wish the coaches in France would say I was only 33. Over here, 33 is getting on a bit, but I've still got the motivation, which is why for me it's frustrating that at this moment in time, I'm gonna have to retire. I still feel like I've got a lot to give a team, whether it's here, whether it's in the Premiership. I still felt that the games that I did play this year for Clermont, I was playing some of my best rugby and was feeling fit, was feeling physically strong. So it'll be more upsetting, I think, having to retire when you've still got the motivation to play. A lot of guys get the chance to retire on their own terms and to hang it up when they want to. But if it is what it is, that's what I got to deal with. And luckily I've got a good family around me to make sure that keep my feet grounded. I would love to get an opportunity to continue to play, but if it doesn't happen, then you've got to crack on with life and think about what the next stage is going to be.
Well, whatever those next stages bring, we wish you the very, very best. Thank you so much for joining us, and also thank you for all of the entertainment that you've given to fans all over Europe in what has been today a sparkling European career. Thank you very much for joining us, Nick.
No worries. Thanks. Thanks very much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Great to speak to Nick Abendon, and a player who has caught the eye in European club rugby tournaments with his dazzling speed and sidestep, either from fullback or the wing. Some fascinating insights on starting out with Bath, on a half century of tournament appearances subsequent to that, on being the European Player of the Year in 2015, and on the heartbreak of finals defeats, not once, but twice. And of course, on what comes next in the next period of what has been a glittering career. Please subscribe to our Champions Rugby Show podcast. Leave us a review if you can as well. And let us know which players you want to come on the next shows to share their stories from what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. We've got another European legend coming up shortly. See you next time. Until then, goodbye.